talk about it.
And as always, I gave you the only copy.
Kathy is starting out talking about what you need to know for related to the presentations on your topic that are that you'll be doing here within a couple weeks. So this is what this discussion is about. She's handing things out around the classroom, and hopefully you have peers who are picking this up for you.
Alright, so here's the deal. This synthesis project is due 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks from now.
There's nothing at the end of April. I feel like something to do then.
It's due on Tuesday, April 2nd. Is that when it is, or the 1st or 2nd? It's due on a Tuesday, 2 weeks from next Tuesday. Everybody listening? So what I want to know, I need three brave souls. Well, that tells me it's due the first, because I need three brave souls to start the presentation. So here's a presentation sign up. We'll start on Wednesday, April 2nd. Who would like to get it out of the way? Woo! One, two. We just need one more.
I will.
Here's what I want to make fair. Allie's going next. I don't want to say like, okay, Em, you start, and then it passes around and it gets back there, and Val says, oh, thanks, you guys. I have to go first. What I want to do is front load first. So who wants to get this thing done, get it over with? Everybody has to have it into live text on the 1st of April. But you'll present according to the sign-up sheet that's coming around. I'll put this on Blackboard as soon as it's done. Yes.
So our PowerPoint or like whatever we're going to use to present and our paper needs to be uploaded by
your paper. Only your paper. Okay. The PowerPoint separate, and I'm going to talk about that next. Before we do that, let's do this next. So we've got people signing up when to do it. So this sheet, some of you gave it back to me, but number 3 on the guidelines says that you are to post an annotated bib, a little bit about what you're going to be talking about when you do your presentation, whatever your case is, whatever you chose, and also that you're going to post an article. What I have done is I've placed a sample. Carrie's going to show you how to get to it. Go to Blackboard, go down to the 480 Wiki. From the 480 Wiki, click on, there's the everything that's on here is on here, the guidelines, and click on the bib, and there's a sample over there. Here's the instructions again. That's the one I put up. Go over to the right side, please, Carrie, and view the sample. This is from a student from 2 years ago. It was succinct. It was, at the same time, it was general enough that you'll notice when she talks about assessment, she says she named her young type 1 diabetic female because she couldn't talk about her as an it. So she called her Carla. And she said Carla's 23, she's single, she has 2 girls, and she has poorly controlled type 1 diabetes. But in the assessment findings, she says Carla may have soft, sunken eyes. Eyeballs attributed to a recent weight loss. So she's tentative there. What's the difference between talking about Carla being 23, single with 2 kids, and the assessment findings she may have? How can that be tentative?
Every
person's going to have the same thing. So as you're into this, hopefully you've done the page where I initially said, read, read, read. If you've not done this reading yet, you're kind of like, where am I going to start on this? If you go on and start doing your reading, that question will fall away. It'll fall away because you'll say, oh my gosh, these people are going to be diagnosed young. It's going to be poorly controlled in so many of them for so many reasons. She's a single mom with 2 kids. Does she have time really to be taking care of her diabetes? you better make time, right? Those kids won't have a parent. I have one now. You better make time. Okay, so do your reading. This came from the syllabus. It tells you exactly, hopefully you still have it. I saved the purple copy because we talked about this the first day we were ever together. This is how you're going to develop your information. Okay. The sample here, Carrie, if you'll go ahead and scroll through, it's, when I say succinct, it's 3 pages long, and there's her annotated bib. Have you done an annotated bib before? Okay, good. All right. So there you go. So this student's was 2.5 pages, 3 pages long is what it says here. The next thing, if you'll close that and open up her article, you are to post something similar to this, and then go in and post one of your articles. And you need to do it a week before you're going to present. So I have some volunteers here who probably are done with their paper, and they're going to put this up, and they're all going, no, I signed up. That don't mean I'm done. It's not the same thing. All right. But you know, some of us like the pressure. We work better under pressure. So now they put that pressure on themselves, they'll be up all night writing when they get done with their shifts at the hospital. Right. Okay. Close. Or feeding Ben. Okay. All right. So.
That's my name.
I mean, feeding. No, nice. Elias. Ben will be feeding Elias. They knew what I meant. Or Lindsay will be feeding Ben.
Oh, Elias.
You knew what I meant. Okay. So, do your annotated bib, a summary, and an article. Okay? That's that part of it. And you've got your sample there. Coming around are two more very succinct examples of the PowerPoint presentation. You have 20 minutes. One is on chronic kidney disease. Nikki Weedy did that last year. And the next one is on cystic fibrosis. Who of you know, some of you know, Christy Van Velzen, who cares, is that her married name?
No.
What is it? Harthorn, thank you. And she shared down to all the very personal cares that she's been involved with her husband, who lives with it, but lives a pretty darn normal life for having it. So anyway, here's just a couple examples. We can start this one in the back and let them come through and see how succinct you can make your presentation materials. Bring that to class. I know printing is a huge issue. It really is easier for us to follow if you can print one page front to back for us. Is that doable? And I don't want to have you printing off 10 pages of things and being buried under printing costs, but one page I think is probably doable. Okay, so questions? Everybody ready to go? Okay, at the end when Carrie's done, I'd like to meet with my 7 preceptor group for a few minutes, and I'll hand it back to Carrie. Just for a quick few minutes when we're done today. Okay? Who else isn't here? I know Sam's playing basketball.
Jordan isn't here, and Tina.
Okay.
Okay, so I know I've asked you this before, but I can't remember. So my patient is a slightly different than like all the normal. I'm doing non-small cell lung cancer. So, do I need to present, like on the wiki that you showed us, how like they may present this way?
Yeah.
So if I say, like most patients may present this way, but my patient is presenting this way.
Absolutely. Okay. That's absolutely all you do. Okay. How many journals have you read where it'll say, most will show up this? Sometimes you'll see this. Absolutely. Anything else? How far is anybody, honestly? Anybody done? Anybody done reading? Anybody started reading? Hands for started reading. Okay. This is a huge project. It's 15% of your grade, and you do have to present it. And the rubric is in your syllabus for what we'll be looking at. It goes into your permanent file. I'm not trying to scare you, but it is 15% of your grade, so get busy. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie.
Yes, I needed to make a comment too. I'm going to be adding your percent for ATI into the grade book so you can see where you are. I'll either be adding the 100% or we do 50%, Kathy said, for if you didn't pass. just so you can see where your grade is at. Okay, so if you notice any major changes recently, just make sure you go and see if that's where that was. Now that 50% can be added to it.
It's going to drop the grade.
50% it will.
50% will drop your grade. If you think about it, you start off with 100%. You know that each exam is worth 12%. If you're getting less than 100% on each of your exams, let's say you're getting 90%, that's what's showing up. So the exam is built with 5% for ATI. You either get 100% of that, 50% of that if you get it on the second try, or 0%. Think about that a little bit. Think about how the grade is built to meet 100%. Four exams, one final exam, ATI, logs. What am I missing? One other section in there. Anyway, built to total up to 100%. So the second ATI, have you been meeting with anybody on that? The second ATI, have you talked to Dr. Ruth about it at all?
Yeah.
Huh? No, nobody? Okay, all right. So that's a ways down the road, but of course you're gonna wanna earn some of those points back if you can. Yeah, Carrie will be putting in the points for people that got 100%, and that will show up as the full 5%. If anybody that needs to take it again, second time, you're only going to get 2.5%, which is 50%. Okay, so it's going to drop the grade. People are always like, huh? It's just math. You know, it's just how it happens. Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're going to now go through our HIV case study, and that covers what our highlights, what we need to know for HIV. And hopefully you use the PowerPoint as well as your textbook to help you complete that. All right. Yes.
If we don't make it through all the material today, will it still be on the test?
Good question, because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Good question.
There was a lot here.
There was a lot here, and there is quite a bit. We've covered some of the cancer content already with leukemia. I would go into it more in depth. How many of you have actually been into the course and looked recently? Anybody this week?
By the course, what do you mean?
Into the online part.
Blackboard.
Yeah. Did you see the cancer podcast there? Okay. If you go into... Okay. It's not letting me in because I didn't close out right the last time. So instead of keep hitting click, gives me that time at the top. Basically, what I have already done, if we don't get there, is I have already podcasted your entire lecture of cancer, and I will hand out the PowerPoints, as well as if you like the condensed version of a worksheet, I have that too for you. You can fill in with what you need to know for the test. So it's all right there for you, and it's downloaded in an MP3. So if you like to walk or work out or whatever, you can download it, the lecture, and then you can just listen to it as many times as you would like to feel comfortable with the content. Okay.
So yes,
because there's still a lot of content. I mean, I could keep pushing it back, but we're still gonna have to have that content at some point anyway, and I don't think your light gets any lighter. Load gets any lighter, sorry. You know, the further down we go. So, all right, let's start with HIV.
Okay, do I have a volunteer to read?
Sure.
Thank you.
That's it. First.
Oh. Yep, just read until you're tired of reading, and then somebody else can jump in.
Ben Majors, a 35-year-old white man, came to the local mental hospital complaining of impaired concentration, withdrawal from family and friends, mood swings, difficulty with memory, fatigue, and suicidal ideation. 2 months before coming to the hospital, he moved to the area from San Francisco to be with his family. On admission, Mr. Majors' assessment revealed that he had lost 10 to 15 pounds since coming to his parents' home. He had not been able to read or concentrate. His suicidal ideas involved harming himself, but no specific question. Mr. Major's psychosocial history revealed that he was homosexual, and in the mid-1980s, he had visited several bathhouses in San Francisco before settling down with his one close friend. Mr. Major's stated that he had returned home to tell his family that his test for HIV was positive. His family told him that they would support him in any way possible. He denied use of any IV drugs, but had used marijuana on occasion. His medical history included having had diarrhea for the past 3 weeks, night sweats, and enlarged glands in his neck and underarms. Two of his friends recently had been told that they were HIV positive, and two other friends died from AIDS. He fears he has become depressed, believes he is losing his mind, and is becoming more confused. He told the nurse he was having difficulty with tremors in his legs, which occasionally have given him problems with walking.
Anybody else want to pick up reading? Thanks, Kathy.
The main diagnosis was major depression, full-out AIDS, dementia complex, ADC. After Mr. Major's psychiatrist was informed of his history and medication orders were given for fluoxetine, Prozac, and nortriptyline.
All right, current vital signs. As we look at those, is there any that stick out to you as abnormal?
RBCs were
kind of low. RBCs were a little bit low.
Respirations
a little high, right on the top end. What about the ELISA test? Are we stating the obvious there, right? Positive for HIV antibodies. Okay? After 1 week of psychotherapy and medication therapy, Mr. Majors did not show any improvements in mood, affect, or neurological deficits. He began falling when attempting to walk and had difficulty with the mini mental state exam and became more confused. The psychiatrist made a medical referral. Two physicians refused to accept the referral. Finally, the oncologist accepted Mr. Majors' case. 2 days later, he was transferred to the oncology unit. More tests were ordered. As we look at these tests, okay, what do we see? Anything stick out? Okay, white blood cells are what?
Low.
A little bit low. Okay, what about lymphocytes? What's the percent our lymphocytes are supposed to be of that? Generally 20 to 40, and we're at 11, okay? The lymphocyte subsets were the following, okay? Of those, what stuck out to you? Did you look those up?
CD4
count. What do we want that?
Well, below 200 is AIDS.
So. Yeah, below 200 is indicative of AIDS. Okay, basically people are in trouble. There's something going on with the T4 cells or your T lymphocytes when that falls below 500. And we're already to 106. What do our T4, or our helper T lymphocytes, do? Do you remember? Our T lymphocytes basically are the regulators of our immune system. They keep everything going and fighting like they're supposed to. So when there's an attack of our T lymphocytes, which is what happens with HIV, that's the cell the HIV attacks, our immune system basically goes into chaos. It doesn't know how to function well because the T cells aren't there directing what needs to be done. Okay, other labs. Sodium, are we good with that? Okay, albumin. You don't have to necessarily, it's 4 to 6, so we're a little low there, right? Potassium. We're okay, right? Glucose. Are we okay with glucose? Probably. Not real concerned with it. Okay, BUN, what's a normal BUN?
10 to 20,
so we're slightly low with that. Okay, chloride, we're okay. Creatinine, we're okay. Total protein, we're okay. And total CO2, we've talked about that one. What is that? That's right, it's our bicarb, right? Okay, so what are we there? It's so 22 to 26 is normal. So we're normal there, yet. Slightly elevated. If we're looking at ABGs, it's the bicarb, it's the same. Because this is venous blood, and that's arterial blood. Yep. All right, so the other results, VDRL is negative, that's good. Viral load, though, what's that tell us? What's a viral load?
Yeah, say it louder.
Correct. How much of the HIV virus is there? So a viral load of 230,000 copies is high, okay? Our hepatitis B serology was negative. Our stool culture grew salmonella. That's not very good for him either. And a CT scan showed mild brain atrophy with white matter changes. Once Mr. Major was transferred to the medical floor treatment with those three HIV meds, which is a combination med known as Tribsevir, and ampicillin for the salmonella infection were begun. During Mr. Major's hospitalization, his assessment revealed no previous opportunistic disease. He reported that his first symptoms were night sweats, diarrhea, and difficulty with his memory. Difficulty walking began shortly thereafter. So, and we'll talk about this in the questions, but does he have AIDS at this point in his care? Yes. And why is that answer yes? What did the case tell us? His CD4 is low, below 200, and he has an opportunistic infection, and his viral load is high. CD4 counts below 200, viral load is high, and he has an opportunistic infection. Okay, very good. His respiratory status began to change then on day 9. He developed a non-productive cough, dyspnea, chills, and a few crackles in the bases of his lungs. The physician was informed of changes and ordered, his orders include oxygen, via mask at 40%, a chest x-ray, and a second CD4 count. The chest x-ray exam revealed bilat infiltrates. A flexible fibroactive bronch revealed PCP, pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. Mr. Majors was treated with IV pentam. On day 13, his respiratory status worsened. There were indications of respiratory failure. And a decision to be made about intubation and mechanical ventilation. Mr. Majors had difficulty with decision-making and exhibited some psychomotor slowing. So his family was kept informed of his physical condition. Mr. Majors wanted his family to help him make this difficult decision. Considering the quick onset of his symptoms and change in condition, the family chose to admission to the ICU and mechanical ventilation. He was then admitted there, and treatment with IV ampicillin and IV hydrocortisone was initiated. Within 2 days, Mr. Majors was fever-free and was weaned from the ventilator. His respiratory rate had fallen from 40 with vent rate control of 25, and his respiratory distress had lessened. Mr. Majors was then transferred back to the medical unit, and he was getting oxygen via nasal cannula. A third CD4 count was 190. So are we happy with that yet for CD4 count? No, that really hasn't improved a whole lot, but we do see some improvements there. So we're going in the right direction for that, right? All right, the following tables were diagnostic throughout Vince's course on the medical unit and ICU. Let's just look quickly at his parameters for his vital signs. What stands out to you most there for the vital signs? His heart rate. Got pretty tacky in there, right? What about his respiratory rate? That got pretty fast in there too, right? And then his temp elevated some as well between day 9 and day 14. These are the questions. I won't get to that later. We'll look more at the ABGs. Did anybody figure out, because I put ABGs on here just because you're almost done. And there's going to be a lot of ABG questions that you're going to have to deal with your comprehensive predictor and all of that good stuff, NCLEX stuff. So I put it in here as a refresher. Did anybody take the time to analyze them? Guess what they were? Respiratory. Alkalosis. Yep. I won't ask you if it's compensated or uncompensated. We don't have time for that. Okay. But basically, there was a respiratory alkalosis state through that. And the vent worked very well to help the body reverse that by taking control of his respirations. So the body helped to change his pH balance, or the ventilator helped to change his pH balance by changing his respiratory rate and controlling that. So it worked as a compensatory mechanism there. After his return to the medical unit, Mr. Majors was treated for oral candidiasis with nystatin and Nizoral. His skin test indicated complete failure of delayed hypersensitivity reactions, and AIDS was diagnosed. After 1.5 weeks of TMP, SMZ, Bactra. Mr. Majors was weaned from oxygen and discharged. After discharge from the hospital, he was treated with Zidovine, Retrovir, ZDV, and AZT, 300 milligrams, Abacavir, 300, Lamictadine, 150, and oral Bactrim. Now that's one complete history case, right? From beginning to discharge. So what factors initially put Mr. Majors at risk for his HIV infection and AIDS? What were some of the things that we read about?
Multiple sexual partners.
Okay. Homosexuality, does that put people in an increased risk?
If you're using a condom, it's going to, so yeah, kind of, but if the fact that you can't really get pregnant, so some part of the time,
correct. So yes and no. The newest research that is just out says it happens just as common in heterosexuals as it does in homosexuality.
Anymore. At higher risk of disease if he was homosexual in the 1980s.
Correct. Correct. What else? What else did he visit in the 1980s? And what is that? How many of you hadn't heard of that before? I'm not that old either. I looked it up when I put it in to make sure I knew what it was. What is it? A place where they would go to connect with each other, okay, if you want to put it that way, okay? And they would kind of live and have cohabitation living in those places, okay? He settled down with a friend. What was his friend? I mean,
his partner.
And he was HIV positive, assuming. Did he do IV drugs?
He reports none.
He reports none, but he did report using what?
Marijuana.
Okay, so can we necessarily rule that out? Not necessarily.
Well, if he's honest about it.
You never know. But it really doesn't matter in the end, okay? What tests are used to screen for HIV infection? I hear a lot of rumbling. Who would like to say? There's many ones. There's
antibody and an antigen.
Yep, antibody. There's the, it used to be ELISA, or now EIA, enzyme-linked immunoabsorbent assay. Enzyme immunoassay is now what they've abbreviated that to, made it shorter.
Maybe the rapid test at
rapid HIV test, yep. And what does that test if they take a rapid test?
Just the antibodies.
It tests for the antibodies, but how do we, is it, do they take body fluids? You take blood? Blood, saliva, or fluids, urine, they can even take. Okay, even though it's not in high doses there. Blood and saliva are the best. The rapid HIV test, do they have to come to a clinic to have that done? Or can that be done at home? It can be done at home and it's sent in, yeah. Anymore. There was a lot of debate, and there still is a lot of debate on if that's okay or not, because who wants to get, is it safe for a patient to get an HIV diagnosis if they don't really understand what it means or what care then they have to take from that? So there's a lot of debate on that type of a test, if it should be allowed or not. The Western blot is another test that you'll see run. It's a more specific confirming test than the enzyme immunoassay test, the EIA. But with all of these tests, it's very important to remember that there needs to be more than one positive test to verify an HIV diagnosis. Okay, so if they come up with one positive, they need to retest in 3 weeks again. And then a lot of times they will retest again at six weeks. Okay, so it's more than one test. And so the patients also need to understand that.
If it's negative, then you wouldn't need to obviously.
Right,
okay.
Right. You wouldn't need to retest. But because of the error risk with the positive, they want to just verify. Because there are other things that can make a positive than just the HIV. There are different, it can carry different proteins that can have a false positive.
So is there any time you should wait to take this test? Because what if it was like 2 seconds afterward, you know, you're not going to be positive. He took like a rapid.
Correct. Because how long does it take in the body for you to actually build up enough to become positive? 2 to 8 weeks. Absolutely. So if you have had, if you have been exposed, I'll go that route, to the HIV virus last night, okay, you cannot go tomorrow or today and get tested and come positive. Because there has to be enough of that built up in your system to actually come positive. So the other reason for the multiple tests, to verify that, yes, for sure, that's what that is.
So why wouldn't they retest the initial thing?
They're going to probably look at, so if they had an activity, then they would. But anymore, we offer, have you been offered the HIV when you've gone in for physical? Maybe none of you have ever gone in for physical. But anymore, at different points, even for kids and we were adopting our children, we are asked, do you want to run an HIV test on these kids? Do you want to run an HIV test? So it's becoming a pretty common thing. So for me to, you know, if I didn't think there was anything suspicious going on, I wouldn't necessarily have them run another one on their own. So it would depend on what risk factors, if they were negative, if they would want to run another one. Does that make sense? Yes?
Now for all HIV tests, do you want to do more than one test?
Okay. Yep. Always want at least 2 to confirm, if not 3. All right, what lab tests are done to help determine the treatment for HIV?
CD4,
we kind of talked about these already.
Viral load.
STD screen. Okay. Hepatitis series, absolutely. We'd want to look at that. Would we want to look at just a general white blood cell count? Lymphocytes? Did you say that right? Some people might have said it. Okay. Anything else? Those are the main ones. Okay.
Drug resistance too, just to see if the type of
the strain that they have would be resistant. Okay, very good.
Drug resistance.
But if they haven't taken any, they wouldn't be resistant to them, probably. But that's definitely a good thought if they have taken any. All right, number 4. What clinical indicators would be used to determine whether Mr. Majors has major depression or ADC, which is AIDS Dementia Complex? So let's talk about AIDS Dementia Complex. So what happens, what does a patient look like if they have AIDS Dementia Complex? What did you find?
Memory problems.
Yep, cognitive dysfunction. They can't concentrate, they have decreased memory.
Coordination.
Yep, lack of coordination. What happened with him? If we think back to what we read in the case, what did he have? Did he have good judgment? No, he didn't. Remember, he asked his family to help him make some of those decisions. Slower thinking. Okay, he had motor problems. We talked about that. That goes along with it as well. Leg weakness, ataxia, clumsiness. Behavior changes. Did he have any behavior changes? Yeah, he had behavior changes. He had some social withdrawal, delirium, kind of goes along right along with that dementia. But they will also see social withdrawal, anxiety with those behavior changes. So how does that look different than depression?
Just think. Sadness.
Correct. Say that again, but you're right. Really, there really isn't as much sadness. Yep. And what else did they try with him that wasn't effective? Mini mental status, but what else did they try?
Antidepressants.
So they tried antidepressant medications with no symptomatic relief. So what is the difference between HIV infection and AIDS? We've already hit these once. This is one of the key things you need to understand. CD4 less than 200. Yep, an opportunistic infection and increased viral load. So what is an opportunistic infection?
Something that's already in your body and your immune system is decreased, like it starts having...
Really, it could be almost anything, right? An opportunistic infection is any infection really that can set in when your body doesn't have the defenses it needs to fight things off. So it can be viral, fungal, protozoan, bacteria. The PowerPoint slides talk about a whole bunch of different things that they could have, okay? What about PCP, that pneumonia that he had? Pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. Some recent literature will call it Jarovecki pneumonia. Okay, so why? Basically, it's specific, if you see the name of that, it's specific to HIV, the PCP, pneumonia, and it's related to, it's a protozoa bacteria that actually gets into your into the lungs and can grow, and it happens most with HIV. That's when they see it, is with HIV. They can develop AIDS-related cancers, okay? There's a specific one that is always kind of known to fall with HIV. It starts with a K. Does anybody in the room know what that one is? Kaposi's, yep. In the slides, there's a picture of Kaposi's sarcoma. Not that you have to recognize what that is, but there are specific ones that go right along with AIDS. There's AIDS dementia and also AIDS wasting syndrome. So what is the difference, though, again, if we say someone is HIV positive, what does that mean to you? We know we defined what AIDS was, but what is, if someone says I'm HIV positive, how do you understand that? Very good. They're carriers of the virus, but it's not progressed where it's necessarily debilitating them, right? So they're carriers of the virus. But the body is able to keep it at bay enough that it's not having opportunistic infections, necessarily problems with the white count. Number 6, when is it appropriate for the healthcare provider to offer antiretroviral therapy to an HIV positive patient? When, you guys have been doing a lot with your heart project, your medication compliance project, right? With your HIV, with your taking your Tic Tacs or Kool-Aid or what, chocolate chips, whatever you're taking. Mm-hmm. So what have you found out? How soon should your medications be started? Did anybody read about that?
Well, it's a slow progressing disease. They seem to be like committed to taking.
Absolutely, they have to be committed to taking it. Should we start these medications right when they're diagnosed with HIV, or should we wait until they have AIDS? Diagnosed with AIDS. Yep, start them right away. Okay, start them right away, as soon as they're confirmed HIV positive. What are some of the biggest concerns? As you're writing about your side effects of your medications and complications with those meds, what are some of the things that are popping up? So we start them right away, and that's great for HIV, but what effects do those medications have on the body long term? What were some of the things you're seeing? Anything? If you stop taking your medication or don't take it in the proper schedule, you develop what?
Resistance.
Yeah. Biggest thing is medication resistance. Okay, the other thing is a lot of them are very toxic to the liver, especially if you take them for a long period of time. Okay, we've kind of answered number 7. I always jump ahead when I'm talking. I apologize for that. What clinical indicators confirm Mr. Major's HIV infection had progressed to AIDS? His CD4 count was 106. His viral load was 230,000, and his stool culture came positive, right, for salmonella. So he had an opportunistic infection as well as an increased viral load and decreased CD4 count. Okay, describe the symptoms of PCP.
Fever.
Very good. What else? Dry cough.
Say it again, louder.
Crackles in their lungs. Weight loss. Hyperventilation. So that's tachypnea. Okay, they can have chest pain absolutely from all that coughing. It's going to hurt. Night sweats. Night sweats. Are some of those pretty nonspecific? I mean, you wouldn't jump right away to any conclusion that it was PCP, would you? Unless you knew that they had HIV in their diagnosis. What symptoms and pulmonary diagnostic findings did Mr. Major's case indicated the need for a transfer to ICU? So when did they think, why did they think he needed to go to ICU? Because he has PCP, he has a bad infection in his respiratory system. And if we look at his vital signs as well as his ABGs, things were getting worse, right? He was breathing too fast. His ABG was uncompensated respiratory alkalosis on day 9, just on oxygen. So that's telling us oxygen alone isn't effective. So we needed to breathe for him in order to help correct that. You can hopefully, my goal with that was so you could see the trending between the vital signs and the ABGs.
Okay.
Mechanical ventilation and ICU admission for a person with AIDS is controversial. Why was Mr. Majors admitted to the ICU? Why would it be controversial? Possibly could spread it. There's a lot of diseases that are probably could be spread in the ICU. Why would it be controversial? Possibly.
Prognosis.
And we have come a long way from where we were 10 years ago with HIV and AIDS and the treatment of that. But it used to be thought of as it was kind of, is it worth it to take up an ICU bed for someone who's really not going to get better anyway? And what is their quality of life? Okay, as you think about cancer and cancer patients, sometimes that can kind of fall into that same category at times. How much treatment do we do? Is it going to be effective? Those types of things. Okay. Why was he admitted to the ICU? Why did they decide to put him in? For his respiratory failure. But what other things did he have going for him? Was he old?
No.
Thank you. No is correct. 35 is not old.
He was.
He had the counts that he could have been. Yep. Whether they actually did it or not, right? Did he have other comorbidities? Had he been a smoker all of his life? Was he a diabetic? Did he have anything else that was causing havoc on his body, or was it just the HIV virus? Just the HIV. And what he was having with the pneumonia was an acute problem. So they could fix that if they were aggressive and could watch him and treat his respiratory problem. They thought his prognosis around this event was good. Okay, so then they were going to can fix that part to help him. What treatments did Mr. Majors receive in the ICU to ensure a successful outcome? What did they do? They gave him antibiotics, right? What else did they do? Corticosteroid. So the IV hydrocortisone. They ventilated him. We talked about that. What did they give him for his PCP?
Pentam.
Okay. And did they start him on antiretroviral medications? Yes, they did. Okay. They did. And the combination of those are going to be effective. How? How do the antiretroviral medications work? Say it louder. Yeah, it's basically doing the opposite of what the virus itself is, okay? It's working to decrease your viral load and increase your CD4 count, and they all work a little bit differently, and that's why you wrote up on some different ones with that project you did. And for the test, you don't need to necessarily understand how each one of those functions, because they are so different, but that's in general what they do, okay? What are some nursing interventions that's going to help Mr. Majors with his psychosocial, spiritual, and physiologic needs? What are things, if you were that nurse taking care of him, what are things you could do besides physical needs? What?
Be on time with his
meds. Absolutely. That's okay. Be on time with his meds. That's going to help tremendously with his recovery.
Support group.
Absolutely. So he's not alone, right?
Find out if he has any spiritual considerations that we should follow.
Absolutely. What are his spiritual considerations? Does he have anyone he goes to for spiritual support? Can we contact them?
Well, family, so they know what's going on and they're not afraid of.
Correct. Educate, right? Educate and talk to the family and with him in there so they're all hearing it because he's not going to remember it well. But it's important to include the patient as well as the family and all that education, but it's going to be very important. What else can we encourage of him? As much what as possible. Absolute participation and independence. We want to encourage that for as long as it is safe for him to do. As he continues to grow weaker, that he may not feel that way, but he may start to feel a little better when his HIV medications actually start to take effect and his immune system kicks in a little bit. Anything else? Okay, number 13. When assigned to a patient with HIV infection, what personal feelings or concerns should be acknowledged? For you, what personal feelings do you have when you care for someone? Or maybe you've known, maybe you haven't, but you probably care for someone who had HIV. And if you haven't, you probably will. How do you feel about that?
It's safe, you're safe.
Yeah, it's safe, you're safe. Is it hard not to judge them because we know how it's transmitted? Some say yes, some say no. And that's okay to have those different feelings. We all come to this with a different level of comfort, with some of this understanding. But they're all things that you as a nurse need to think about because chances are, at some point, depending on where you work, you will come in contact with someone who has HIV or AIDS. Okay? And again, general safety, standard precautions when you're caring for the patient is what you need to use. So are the ICU nurses at an increased risk for acquiring AIDS from patients? Especially if they receive mechanical ventilation. Is there an increased risk? Let me give you your stuff. Yes, no. Yes, no.
Not if they take the proper precautions.
Is HIV in saliva?
No.
Transferable or in?
Yes.
That's a good question. Is it transferable or is it in? That's very good, Stanley. So can you answer that?
Well, you just mentioned that there's going to be small amounts in like saliva and stuff like that, and like traces, but like, is there enough to be detected?
Correct. So not necessarily with mechanical ventilation, but do a lot of other procedures happen in ICU that could cause the spread of HIV that we need to be concerned about? Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Is it recommended protocol, or what is the recommended protocol for exposure to HIV? I think we had one of something similar to that in clinical. So what happens? Just tell us the process. What did you guys do?
Well, we told Kathy.
Perfect. Step one. Then what happened?
Then we went to the ER.
Okay.
Reported the incident.
Okay.
And then
she's got her blood drawn for a baseline. And then the patient that potentially contaminated her, his test for HIV is coming back the next day. So then they called her.
Yeah. She had to talk to occupational health, like to the occupational health people. and they had to deal with, like, because, like, yeah, there's some big things. Like, they couldn't tell her right then. They couldn't get into her chart, the guy's chart, and see if it was back yet. They, like, made her go through occupational health versus just, like, signing in and looking at it.
Right, because of HIPAA. They still had to follow the HIPAA guidelines, yeah. So basically, look for HIV, concern with HIV, is it any different than any other blood, if you would get any other needle stick? Or is it basically the same protocol, same process? Yeah, so it's basically the same process if you have a needle stick with how we're gonna provide care.
I think, like, personally though, the nurse might act a little bit more, pay a little extra attention if they know this person has HIV. Not that they're gonna try to do anything, like, overly different, but you'll be aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. It's just good to know, right? So we can watch and be tested. Yes.
Okay. I know it's going to vary with different systems, but, like, let's just say at Orange City, I haven't cared for a patient who is HIV positive or anything. Is it pretty apparent when you log into their chart for you as a nurse to see that? No.
Well, you look at their health history and you'll see it.
Yeah.
Their health history will say it, but what?
They put on the handout report.
It's generally reported.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not like a big red warning thing that comes up if you open your chart.
The plague!
No, it's not. But obviously, as healthcare providers, you can provide best care too if you're knowledgeable about it. But should knowing they have HIV change the care you provide?
No, not necessarily.
No, not at all. All right, any questions about HIV? All right. I knew we were going to be running short on cancer time. I didn't realize we were going to only have 8 minutes.
So,
2, 3, 4, 5.
So, quick question. With the HIV portion of the test, would you say focus more on the case study, more so than the PowerPoint?
Correct.
Okay.
What we covered in the case study is what's going to be what's important. Although, you know, if you have questions, refer to your PowerPoint.
Okay, definitely.
This is going to be a good study
tool. Okay. Okay, I'm also going to give you PowerPoint. All right, like I had mentioned before, because cancer is so prevalent, we see it a lot. Did you realize that 1 in 2 men in their lifetime, half, 50% of all guys in their life are going to develop cancer? 1 in 3 women at some point in their life will develop cancer. Okay? Why? Any thoughts? We're living longer. Absolutely. And as we live longer, what happens? Things, our body starts to not work quite right. Okay, very good. Okay, there might be, because we have comorbidities, we have other things affecting the body. Are we exposed to more things?
Yes.
I'll say yeah. That's sure, I like that answer.
Don't they say that the longer you live, the more times, like, your cell cycle replicates, the more chance there is of it?
Absolutely. Age is a big thing. What about genetics anymore? What are we finding out about cancer? Highly genetic, isn't it? Highly genetic. So it's important that we're looking at all of those things. The podcast that I did goes over this entire PowerPoint. So it's all MP3 version. So all you need to do is listen to it, and you can follow along with your PowerPoint. To have the full lecture discussion. I created the handout as an extra little piece for you for kind of if you like to condense something as you're studying for your test, use the handout. That will specify what you need to know. And just like if we were sitting in class, if there was something important I wanted you to know, I said that. So I was on the podcast, I'm talking to you just like I am now. And you might hear my kids in the background. You might hear the door opening and closing, and by the end, I don't even remember who I am. By the third podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, this is Carrie, and I think we're starting on podcast 3. Okay, it was a long night by the time I was getting this done. So just enjoy it. If you have questions, let me know. The test will be on Wednesday. I welcome your questions, okay? If there's anything that's confusing to you, If you're just not able to grasp something because it's so vast or so large and you're not quite sure how to help narrow that down, let me know. I'll do what I can to help you. Okay, you can send me shoot me a quick text or an email. You have my cell phone. I welcome a call as well. So, yes,
so
Caitlin.
Being tested over the pain.
Correct. Cancer is on this test.
There's one more person here, excuse me, that did not sign up. Who didn't sign up for presentation? Okay. No, I'm counting the three, so there's one more. Emily was one. Somebody here did not sign up. Okay, thank you. Sorry, Carrie.
Nope, you're fine.
We're going to run out the door.